Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
New U.S. sanctions on Iran took effect today, 6 months after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the international nuclear deal.
The sanctions target Iran's shipping, financial, and energy sectors, all key to the country's already struggling economy.
Bombs, which the FBI referred to as improvised explosive devices, were sent to the FBI's bomb laboratory in Quantico, Virginia.
We're in Mexico again tonight as thousands of migrants try to find a faster way to the U.S. border. The White House says it's now getting help from the Mexican.
Breaking news out of Pittsburgh. A man accused in the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh is pleading not guilty, and he also wants a jury trial. You can see he's facing a 44-count.
In the final seconds before the Boeing 737 MAX crashed into the water, it was traveling at more than 500 kilometers an hour. All 189 people on board were killed.
You've now entered the House of Mystery.
Crime, conspiracy, history, and science.
With your hosts, Al Warren, Mike Brown,
Julie Sav, Michael Butterfield,
Dr. Joseph Usinski, and Michael Hawley.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm the host, Al Warren. Co-hosting today, we have Mr. David Martino.
Hey, Al.
Hey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
There you go. We're having Dave today. Now today, it's kind of different than what we've had the rest of the week. We go all over the place with this show, but today we are... We have a find of a lifetime. We're going to be talking about Atlantis, the lost world. So joining us today, we've got Christos DeJonas, and we're going to talk about his new book, Atlantis, the find of a lifetime. It just came out May 3rd. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me, Al.
So this is quite the feat here, find of a lifetime. So before we get into the book details, let's talk about you a little bit. So where did Chris come from, and what got you into looking for Atlantis?
Sure. First and foremost, the accent is Greek Cypriot, in case your audience wonders. No matter what I do with it, I just can't get this thing go away. So it's like a bad allergy. So I was born on the island of Cyprus. After the Turkish invasion of 1974, we moved to Athens, Greece temporarily, where I finished high school. And in 1980, just fresh out of high school, we migrated to the United States, where I've been for the last 4 years. I'm a general contractor by trade. For the last 30 years or so, our company's been renovating large multifamily projects in Georgia. And I'm also a real estate investor, an upscale home designer, and a part-time author, obviously. As for the book, what drove me to write this book I guess that since I was a teenager, I was always fascinated with our ever-evolving history, and especially with cases where myths or mythical places turn out to be real. Like, for instance, the ancient city of Troy. For many centuries, we thought it was a product of Homer's imagination, until Schliemann discovered it and found it exactly at the location where Homer had placed it in his story. Another one is the lost city of Ubur, mentioned in the Quran. That was also found in the desert sands of Arabian Peninsula. And the same goes for Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, known today as Mira and Babitra. They're also found, and they're now places of a continuous study. So I always thought that Plato's Atlantis fell into this category where one day could be proven real. That's what drove me into it.
Now with Atlantis, there's been a lot of all sorts of myths and movies and stories and things going for years now. So is that kind of what drew you to it? Was it just?
No.
Okay, so what was it specifically?
I'm not a fiction author. I don't even have it in my vocabulary to be a fiction author. I'm a researcher. I do this as a hobby. I love research work. And that's what I started doing with Uchronia. And this is what this book is all about. It's all about research. So, you know, again, this is the kind of a book that the myth turns out to be real after all. And just like I say on the cover of the book, you know, that I describe that, and it's very important, you know, the book, you know, it's a chronicle 10,000-year journey that effectively reveals Atlantis' submerged island, and it demonstrates how Plato's 2,000-year-old story connects, this is important, connects to real history. All the information in the book is either current knowledge or material from recent scientific studies and discoveries that ultimately corroborate my conclusions. There is no fluff writing in there or a bunch of speculations, as in the case of other books or TV shows, like you said, we often see on Atlantis, just straight to the point, details and facts.
Okay, so let's start that. So where did the journey start for you? What did you first discover, and what led you to the location you think is Atlantis?
Well, it all starts with a description, okay? Plato not only gave us the chronology when the story of Atlantis took place, which is 9,600 BC, but he provided us with a detailed description of the island, region by region, and literally down to the square kilometer. When you count all the clues given to us by Plato, there should be 14, 15 clues in his description. And remember, a genuine discovery requires that all elements of the physical description are present. All are found to be in the right order. And the chronology also must be a match. If a single piece of the description is missing, the elements are not arranged in the right order, the dimensions are wrong, or the chronology does not coincide with Plato's given chronology, I'm sorry to say we have nothing. And that was the challenge originally. Now, unfortunately, in this case, we have every past claim or theory, basically, with one or two clues and just lots of speculation. We don't have anything, what we call a perfect case scenario. Even the original Santorini hypothesis, if you think about it, did not perfectly match Plato's description. Although the Minoan civilization and the island's destruction by a volcano appears to be a good match. The given chronology was thrown out, calling it a mistake on Plato's behalf. As, you know, if we had the right to dispose anything we didn't like out of his testimony. And another bigger problem with that theory, though, was that the primary island of Atlantis, an island the size of Crete, one Plato said it was 9 kilometers away from the island within an island setting, is missing from the Santorini backdrop of 1600 BC. All these are serious inconsistencies that, you know, allowed critics in the past to question the theory as well as the story's validity. So long story short, we never had, until now, a perfect case scenario. Now, if you look at my book, you know, and you, you know, to just really look at it and study, you know, page by page, you know, it is as if we're looking at a lottery ticket, if I can rephrase that, with all the numbers on it matching. In this case, not only the 14 clues, including the chronology, perfectly match, but the physical elements are arranged in the exact order as Plato depicted. So I call that a perfect case scenario, you know, when you have all this fall in place, unlike any other case in the past. You know, we had, for example, you know, few documentaries recently on TV from various people, James Cameron and William Shatner and Nat Geo and, you know, Jim Cameron, Atlantis Rising, for example, or Nat Geo's Legends of Atlantis, you know. All these documentaries, they're full of speculation and no evidence to prove that they're matching all these clues I just mentioned. Now, to the audience, of course, and an informed audience, you know, all they see is that these people claim they found this and they found that, but if the audience is uninformed, they just don't know what's right and what's not, you know, what match and what not. So, you know, we keep having all these documentaries keep coming out and keep coming out, but nobody follows the instructions. Nobody follows Plato's direction, and they're just making things up, including, by the way, the brand new one is coming out from Morgan Freeman right now. I think there is one. I wrote him a letter the other day, and I said, I love you as an actor. I like to see everything, you know, you do, but this documentary you're about to put out, it does not work out, you know, because they're changing from the get-go the chronology of Plato's, they're changing Plato's chronology from the get-go, from the beginning of the documentary, and they're just shooting to find out something in the wrong chronology.
Well, how do you compete with stuff like that? But, you know, because if you're being a serious researcher and you're looking for real evidence and trying to discover the truth, and you've got big money productions like that one, how are you going to compete with something like that? Because that'll come out and people will believe that more than, let's say, you, just because of the star power.
Well, it's not about believing. It's about proving you have the facts and somebody else not. I think all these major productions, you know, if you try to sell something through the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, they pay pretty hefty, you know, per episode, you know, or whatever you sell. I think these big productions are more into selling a product than really telling the truth. In fact, you know, I'm not saying they wouldn't present the truth, but evidently, nobody was able, as I did so far, to just describe it, you know, clue by clue by clue, and just say there is 14, 50 clues in this description, and here all they are. You know, usually they say, oh, you know, I found that. For example, let's take the documentary in Spain. You remember recently, a couple of years ago, we had a documentary filmed in Spain, and they you know, basically the researchers, they said they think they found Atlantis, and the only clue they could produce it was a carving on a stone, basically with concentric rings, and they said, "Ha, you know, we found something." Now it's a significant find, but it means nothing. It's one clue out of 15. Well, what happened to the other 15 clues? So I'm not worrying about these people competing with me. This is not about a competition. It's about finding something and being able to show others that here it is. Everything matches. Try to prove me wrong. And this is what this is all about. I'm just, at this point, I'm just trying to reach out. I just sent the book to a professor out in Tennessee the other day, an archaeologist, sorry. Well, it's a professor too. And I'm waiting for his response. I'm just trying to have people look at it, really look at it, and see if they can debate me or tell me what does not fall in place. Because the way I'm looking at it, and everybody, I show the book and they read the book, everything perfectly matches. I showed that to an engineer the other day who was a non-believer, and now he became a believer. He said, I think you found something. So it's not a competition. That's all I'm saying. You know, it's... I care less about what anybody does. I just want to be able to reveal, define, and demonstrate that this is it. You know, there is no better match than this.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, without giving too many spoilers, could you give us some of that evidence of Atlantis existing and where
it Let me describe be? How Plato described Atlantis, and you can see how difficult it is to match all these things, all these elements. I'm going to read this because it's a long description here. I don't want to miss anything. So I'm going to read this this quote from Plato, basically. Well, actually, it's actually from my book, but, you know, and it's a series of things that it will, at the end, will lead into about 14, 15 different clues. So it goes. The northern region of the island was covered in mountains that reached the shores. So he said, the northern region, full of mountains, extended all the way to the sea. That's the first clue. Well, that's actually, there's three clues in that sentence. Just south of the mountainous region, he said, there was an oblong valley, 555 square kilometers in size. Remember, oblong valley, not square or circular, south, not east or west, precisely 555 square kilometers in size. Further south, he said, there was another valley, two-thirds in size of the Oblong Valley, 370 square kilometers, and that was surrounded by mountains. Once again, he was very specific, second valley, further south, two-thirds in size, 370 square kilometers. Then he said, 9 kilometers away from what was the primary island of Atlantis, not 10 or 15 kilometers, but precisely 9 kilometers away, there was a round island within an island setting, most likely a collapsed volcano with a flooded core. And this round island had a single opening on, its outer cliffs, single opening, not two or three, where ships could enter into the island's flooded center, where they were able to reach the inner island, which was 0.92 kilometers in diameter. Once again, round island within an island setting, 9 kilometers away from the main island, single opening on its outer ring, in an inner island, 0.92 kilometers in size. The crown city of Atlantis, Plato said, was built on this round island within an island. Now, I don't know if you've been counting how many clues there is in this description, but if somebody come and tell you, slam dunk, I covered all these clues, I found it. And here it is. You have to have all this, you know, if you say I found, for example, if one of these things, let's say the Oblong Valley was still 555 square kilometers, let's say it was 300 square kilometers or 700 square kilometers, you just don't have nothing. You know, if one of these clues is not where it's supposed to be or is not the right size, we have nothing. And I have all these clues presented in my find. It's exactly there. It's all there.
Is Plato really the only primary source or source that mentions Atlantis that we can count
yeah,
on?
Yeah, absolutely. There are people all the time that coming up saying, well, what about Edgar Cayce or what about this, what about that? Well, Plato is the sole authority on Atlantis. He's the first one ever who wrote about Atlantis. And everything else followed. So basically, if you trying to follow Atlantis and try to make a discovery, everything Plato said must be to be proven real. To prove the story real, basically, you have to be able to prove everything Plato said. You know, from the chronology to the down to the nitty gritty detail, in order nothing more, nothing less, you know, in order to say I found exactly what Plato was talking about. Now, anything else other than that, you know, whether it's Edgar Cayce or another researcher or anything else, you know, it's all hearsay.
So now you feel like you've got the location. From discovering the location, what can you tell us about Atlantis? Like, what can you say that happened to it?
When I started looking for it. And by the way, this work took me over 4 years, okay? To when I started writing my first book, to even mention about Atlantis, I had no idea what to write. And it took 4 years of research to be able to no, I found something. And then it took another 7 years afterwards, between 2014 and now, with a bunch of other discoveries that came up in the last 7 years to solidify my previous discovery and know for a fact that it's solid. Now, as far as how I started to put myself on the right path, I always thought the chronology was the key to solve this puzzle, okay? Finding the matching site at any other period, first of all, would not qualify as a match. So even if you found something that looked like a match, if the chronology was wrong, because Plato said so, it happened in that chronology, then again, you got nothing. The chronology is very, very important. So you have to start thinking, okay, what was Earth like back in 9,600 BC? What kind of circumstances I'm dealing with back in that time? In order to put myself on the right track, I started with a chronology. So the chronology actually is what helped me, put the puzzle together. You know, from there, everything else kind of fell in place all by themselves. You know, the given chronology, though, forced me to look for a prehistoric island, now submerged, of course, that was above water at around 9600 BC. And then the chronology also helped me to look for a prehistoric island submerged under 400 feet of water, because in the last 11,000 years, the oceans rose by 400 feet. So back to the question you ask, once I knew what I'm looking for and I knew I need to look for something that's, 400 feet deep. And by the way, there are others, they say, oh, it's in the middle of the Atlantic, it's a mile deep. There were some research work done off the coast of Cyprus several years ago. They were looking for a mile and a half deep. All these are just kind of, I don't believe in fiction, things. We know exactly what happened on this planet for the past several thousand years, so we can go back and tell you what kind of effects we had. The ocean, we know the oceans rose by 400 feet. We know we didn't have any supercontinent that, sunk, suddenly the last 10,000 years. We know a lot of things, so we have to be realistic. And, the two realistic things is that, if Atlantis was real, it's got to be under 400 feet of water, because if it sunk, it must have sunk by some kind of natural catastrophe. So now it has to be 400 feet under. And it had to be above water, though, at around 9600 BC. So that was the things I've been thinking about over and over and over. And sure thing, when I started looking, first I had to do a lot of studying, and just compare Plato and check every English translation there is before I got that far, make sure the story jives, because, I also found that a lot of these English translations are not all the same. We have a lot of discrepancies in these English translations. A lot of them translated ancient Greek text word by word, sentence by sentence, not taking into consideration that the ancient Greek is structured in a different way than the English language we used to translate it to. And, I had to read just about every English translation, popular translation out there, to see, why they're translating it the way they do. And first thing I found is that from one translation to another, we have sentences that are different. We have words that they're missing or they're different. And then at the end of the day, I realized that these translations, are inaccurate, because they're not translating the Greek as it's supposed to be translated. When it comes to ancient Greek, and I took that for several years in school, when you translate ancient Greek, you have to understand the meaning before you try to translate it to somebody who speaks English. You know, you can't just read the words, translate the words. If it was that easy, you could have some app do the translation for you, but it's not. There is no app on the planet that can translate ancient Greek because the structure is such that it requires somebody to explain to you what you just read. So, you know, I realized from the get-go, even the original translations, you know, they were inaccurate. You know, when it comes to meaning, the syntactic structure should have been changed before they put out, you know, the meaning of what they read. And it started from there. I realized that a lot of the translations are wrong. And I realized that, you know, Atlantis is not in the Atlantic, as most people think to this day, but it's in the Mediterranean, clearly.
Well, looking back at your previous book on Atlantis, I believe you stated that that you didn't believe that Atlantis was the super advanced civilization that we think of from myth and stories and TV and movies. And I was just wondering, do you know how Atlantis was in its heyday? Does anybody know that? Or is there any evidence or anything that would point to how people lived back then?
Correct. Well, we all know how people behave, during our prehistory. You know, I personally believe that they were a little more advanced than we tend to give them credit for. They're for example, I can just give you an idea. For example, Göbekli Tepe, you know, in Turkey, that structure cannot be erected by hunters and gatherers on a part-time during the week. On their weekend spare time, you know. I mean, you have to have some type of social organization to build, I forgot how many, 20 different structures of that magnitude. And we can't just call them just primitive hunters and gatherers. But on the other hand, they were not that much more than that either, you know. Now, they were advanced enough to be doing these kind of things. They were advanced enough to travel across the Atlantic, as Plato suggested in his story, because he did say, you know, in his story, you know, that there is an island across the Atlantic, you know, bigger than Asia and larger than Libya and Asia, and Libya and Asia together. The thing is, you know, these people were indeed capable, as Plato said, and I proved it in the book, that they were capable of via island hopping to go from North Europe to North America. And again, I'm not just the one, I'll talk about that in a minute a little bit more, but I'm not the one who just said, you know, my research found out that, you know, for the longest time, we thought the Greek islands were uninhabited for thousands and thousands of years. And all of a sudden, you know, recently we found out that
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
People were able to live on the island of Crete 130,000 years ago. Okay, so the island of Crete is 150 miles away from Africa. I'm not going to say the word, but how did people manage that trip, 130,000 years ago? We've got to think about it. Now, they were not modern advanced societies or anything. They were still primitive people, but we underestimating the human ability to do things. When somebody want to do things, they'll do it. And the much longer time you give them, the more they're going to find ways how to do something. So navigation was always a factor that we always ignore. We said, primitive people, hunters and gatherers, what do they know about sailing? Well, they found their way from Africa to Crete or from wherever else they came from, at that point, because they're finding human tools for hunting, in Crete 130,000 years ago. I was reading an article the other day on the island of Naxos, which is another Greek island, Neanderthals. They found Neanderthals there. How did the Neanderthals find a way to a Greek island if their only way, it was not like they walked over the ice, there was no ice or anything. So they were able to build some kind of a craft to go from point A to point B. All these things we've been ignoring for years and years and years. So Plato is the only one who said, who mentioned that 11,500 years ago in his story of Atlantis, he said the ocean back then was navigable, and the people were able to go from it, basically the island of Atlantis, across the vertical ocean. And the vertical ocean is the Atlantic Ocean, obviously, and the continent across the Pillars of Hercules is that of America, not of Atlantis, as many people think when they read the story. It's just they're picking up the phrases from the Greek translated, from the English translated versions, and they just pick and choose the phrases they like, and they turn out to end up with the wrong interpretation of things.
Someone picks up your book and reads it, and what is it you want them to get out of your book? Like, what is it you want them to take away?
Simply, Atlantis is found. I mean, it's in the eyes of the beholder. I'm very methodical about how I present the case, and I have clues that it's not just me saying it. I found this or I found that. On the contrary, I have enough clues in the book that everything I present in the book, basically, whether it's me saying it or not, it's backed by somebody else's study or a scientific study or an archaeological discovery that leaves no doubt that what I'm saying is what took place. And step by step by step, I take you over 10,000 years and I show you, where it all started when Plato said this story started at 9,600 BC, and it takes you all the way to the time before Christ. And I show you exactly what happened to these people, what happened to Atlantis, basically, what happened to these people after the inundation, basically, after the destruction of Atlantis. what happened to them at that point and where they ended up, because they just didn't disappear. You know, you can take the biggest unimaginable catastrophe on the planet. People are like roaches, you know, they just don't disappear. They're going to end up somewhere else. And this is what happened. You know, a lot of them died. Any catastrophe can, you know, eliminate big, you know, populations. But at the end, you know, we're still around, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years, you know, so far, you know. So Atlantis was not the end of things. Yes, Atlantis flooded. Yes, Atlantis, you know, got submerged. But it did not all go underwater. First of all, you know, the tips of the mountains of Atlantis, they're still above water. The body, the main body is underwater, but the islands, and Plato, it was clear about that too. He said the tops of the mountains of Atlantis turn into the small islets, you know, that basically represent the body of the land that was once there. So some people remained there, they survived, some people migrated elsewhere. Remember, you know, they were good navigators that could go elsewhere. And they continued on. And as a matter of fact, we know Atlantis by different names. You know, like I said, they did not disappear in the history. History failed to recognize a lot of the clues and a lot of the things that were presented to us, and call them something else over and over and over, up until just before Jesus' time. These Atlanteans were still around. These people were still around. You know, the 10,000 history. Of course, you know, they evolved into different societies, but their history goes back 10,000 years. We just call them different names all along, up until the end.
Were you able to decide or figure out why Atlantis sunk? Like, what made it go underwater?
Like I said, I don't believe in science fiction. I don't believe in supernatural. The primary reason of Atlantis going down was the rise of the oceans. Like I said, the oceans rose after the end of the last ice age. Forward, the oceans rose by 400 feet. Now, we had some severe cases where the oceans rose within one century, maybe 50 feet. We also had one situation where the ocean rose around the globe. Now, I'm talking around the globe. The oceans rose by 9 feet almost overnight when a lake in North America, Lake Agassiz, collapsed. It could be very well connected to the meteor that fell in North America, and that caused the Lake Agassiz to collapse. It was a glacial lake that held 440,000 square kilometers of water, more than all the lakes in the world combined today. And when that wall of that lake collapsed, the oceans rose by 9 feet almost overnight. That is the smoking gun what flooded the low elevations of Atlantis. It's just like New Orleans. You remember when that flooded? It didn't cover the houses over the top, but it covered them enough where it just literally destroyed the city. When you have a flood, you know, 7, 8, 9 feet, you know, overnight, basically you're out of business. You know, forget that civilization, the island civilization. Once the main valleys all flood, you know, by 9 feet of water, basically everybody's running for the mountains. And remember, after that, the waters did not recede. They would keep rising and rising and rising. So that was the end of it. That's how it ended. You know, Plato even said in plural, portentous earthquakes and floods. He did not say, one minute he says it sunk over 24 hours or so. But when you read the text and you carefully about it, he said in plural, it got destroyed after a series of portentous earthquakes and floods. And it's exactly how it happened, you know, at around 8,000 BC to be exact, you know, just before the flooding of the Black Sea, by the way, which up until that point was for millions of years, the Black Sea was fresh water lake. And all of a sudden, around that time, around 8,000 BC, when this incident happened, Lake Agassiz collapsed and the oceans rose by 9 feet, and then the water kept on rising and rising. First, there goes Atlantis. The next thing it goes is the Black Sea becomes a salt lake because the Mediterranean rises so much. It floods into the Black Sea and makes it into a salt body of water.
Now, do you think this happened fairly quickly then? Or did they have a little bit of...
Look, the initial flood was relatively quickly, just like New Orleans. You wake up and you're in it. That was the initial impact. From there, though, these people had trying to escape. You know, I don't know what was the level of destruction, but, you know, you have a gigantic plateau, basically. It holds completely flooded. Then you have the mountaintops, all the mountains all around there. Basically, once you have the plateau area all covered in water, all you have now is a bunch of mountains here and there that basically the mountaintops are above water. So people ran for the mountains initially, and then once the waters kept on rising, then they decided, okay, let's get out of here, you know. So some stayed behind, you know, because these islands still exist today, and the whole populations, you know, of number of people, and they still living in these islands. These islands are livable today. The rest of them, though, moved out, and they went further away to other islands or on the mainland, and they became something else. We call them with different names today, but in fact, you know, started from that very area I'm talking about. And by the way, I'm not the only one who's saying this. I'm talking about studies with DNA evidence that prove it all started from that general area I'm talking about. And then these three other civilizations we call today this or that basically started from that general area. And we didn't realize this until recently. DNA evidence said, oh, yeah, you know, these people came from this region, you know, the Mediterranean, basically, and, you know, whether they settle here or settle there, you know, or call them this or call them that, you know, they're all related. You know, DNA proves that. I'm not just saying this. DNA studies, the last one was in National Geographic in 2019, that said, in fact, a couple of these civilizations go back to the general area I'm talking about.
Well, that's interesting because you're talking about DNA, and I was just thinking myself that I was just wondering the people who fled from Atlantis when they were able, you know, some of the people who were able to get away, you know, what type of evidence or maybe even writings or anything that that we might have in history that would point to the fact that these people came from Atlantis, and like you said, the DNA. So I just find it very interesting. I don't know if you have any more information on that type of remnants of what's left over from the sinking of Atlantis or the flooding of Atlantis.
Let me say one more thing about DNA. You know, there are a lot of people, they still, no matter what you tell anybody, they still support the notion that Atlantis is somewhere in the Atlantic. And you know, my reaction to that is that I always tell them, you know, genetic migration studies already prove that. By the way, when Plato said the Atlanteans were able to travel island by island to the continent across the ocean. I'm talking about haplogroup X. Haplogroup X started from the general area I'm talking about because I had to study also DNA and see, you know, study migrations of DNA and see who migrated where and when and et cetera, in order to make this story fit. You know, just because Plato said so, you know, it's not good enough. You have to go back and find out if indeed there was some gene migration during Plato, when Plato said the story took place, and see what happened. Once I found the island, I had to study a little more about it, study more about migrations, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what I found out, you know. as far as the Hablo Grivex, anyway, switching back to DNA now, genetic migration studies already prove that the Hablo Grivex, a Mediterranean gene, which appears to have originated from the very region I am talking about, I'm just quoting from my book right now, managed a trip to North America 11,500 years ago and mixed itself with the local Indian tribes around the Great Lakes. Heavy traces of X also exist around Gibraltar, Ireland, Scotland, Orkney Islands, Faroe Islands, and Iceland. Every island stopped from Europe to North America. This is exactly what Plato said it happened. So to those who support the notion that Atlantis was advancing into the Mediterranean from somewhere within the Atlantic, I must point out to them that genetic migration studies rule out that possibility entirely. No genetic evidence that prehistoric genes ever made it into the Mediterranean from the West ever came that way. It all went from the Mediterranean to the West and not the other way around. And it did happen 11,500 years ago, by the way.
Well, my other question, you've already covered the DNA portion of it. It was just basically the people who escaped from the flooding of Atlantis, those who were lucky enough to move away. Do we have any remnants of that Atlantean civilization in our history?
Yeah, actually, remnants. We have living populations that once upon a time they were called Atlanteans. You remember I said some people stayed behind, right? On the island, died some, okay. Here we go with a little bit of a spoiler here. All right, those who stayed behind on these mountaintops that turn into small islets, we know them today as the Cycladic civilization. We didn't call them Atlanteans anymore. We just don't know them as Atlanteans. We know them as Cycladic civilization. Those who moved to the island of Crete between 4000 and 3000 BC turned into the Minoan civilization we know today. And those who migrated to the neighboring Greece, which, by the way, this thing was not far from Greece, ultimately became the Mycenaean civilization. Now, I must point that the name Minoans was not that civilization's real name, but a nickname. I don't know if you know this or not, but it was a nickname given to them by Sir Arthur Evans. No one to this day knows what the Minoan civilization was called or what they call themselves. After the eruption of Santorini, you know, those who lived on the island, you know, we know it, they escaped the destruction of the volcano. Not a single dead person was ever found in Santorini, you know, during the excavations. But the historians failed to recognize that the culture of sea people who appeared in the region after the eruption of Santorini were of Minoan ancestry, uprooted from Santorini and the surrounding islands. So they just named them sea people. So we have some sea people now going around raiding every city there is around the Mediterranean, and we just call them sea people. We just fail to recognize that these are the Minoans uprooted from the Santorini and the surrounding islands. Then when we have these sea people settling alongside the shores of the Middle East, then what? We call them Philistines. Again, you know, gave them another name on top of the previous names we've been giving them all along. So we call them Philistines now. Now, a DNA study, again, was proven recently. I think this study also came out in 2019, proven that these Minoans and Philistines and these sea people, they were all the same people. Now, why is history going to go back and correct this incorrected assumptions we had over the years? It's just beyond me. But we call the same civilization from the eruption of Santorini forward, three different names, Minoans, Sea People, and Philistines. Before that, they used to be called Minoans. In fact, Plato and the Greeks and the Egyptians knew of these connections, because when Plato wrote the story, he described the island of the Atlanteans, not just the island, the Atlanteans, from their very early beginnings, 9,600 BC, he described their power and ability to reach another continent across the ocean. He described the destruction of Atlantis by a series of earthquakes and floods associated with the rise of the oceans. He described the transformation of the Aegean after the flooding of the Mediterranean. And finally, he concluded his description with many details from a later time in their history, the Minoan era, which, of course, you know, he was more familiar with. Now, Minoans ultimately were the Atlanteans. They were the post-Atlantean civilization that we should have corrected ourselves and go back and say, Plato was right. You know, I don't know if they were called Atlanteans or not, by the way. You know, maybe just something that Plato made up. You know, the name Atlanteans, it could be just as good as the name Minoans that Sir Arthur Evans gave Minoans, you know. But since Plato called them Atlanteans, we should have go back and find out what the Egyptians called the Atlanteans at that time and continue to use that name rather than just keep on reinventing new names, Minoans, Sea People, this and that. And these are all inconsistencies that lead people to a huge confusion. You know, you just read the history, you just don't know what you're reading sometimes because of all these people appear out of nowhere.
What do you think the biggest surprises that you got in doing your research? Something that you didn't really expect?
Look, the biggest surprise is the find itself. Nobody found it in 2,000 years, and it was always right in front of our eyes. Again, I welcome anybody who likes to sit down and have a cup of coffee with me and talk to me and prove me wrong. So that is the biggest surprise. I was surprised when I found it. I couldn't believe it. That was, you know, I guess it took me 4 years to study and be able to know what I'm talking about. But once I found it, I was thinking, man, you know, this has been always in front of our eyes for 2,000 years, you know, with our technology and everything. And by the way, let me back up a little bit, give other people credit. There is, I found out after I published Ukraine for the first time that some lady from Oceanographic Institution in Athens somewhere, she said if Atlantis was ever a real place, it would have been right here. And she stopped at that. She didn't say anything else more than that. I found that out after, you know, from a blogger, actually. If you read my book, you know, from the author, if you go back in there, you can see how I found out about that. And I stopped the publisher from putting out the original publication, and I said, whoa, wait a second, we're going to put that in there too, because, you know, it kind of ruined. I thought I was the only one who even suggested that, but evidently that lady suggested it too, and it's a serious scientific publication. So, look, you know, all these things, like I said, I'm a researcher. All these things, these are loose puzzles all over the place. You look at on the internet, you study a lot, you know your subject. All these loose pieces are all around you. All I did is pick them up from different places and put them together. And the success here is the find itself. Like I said, it perfectly matches. Like a lottery ticket, you know, when it matches, a match. There is no other ticket like it, you know. So the success is in the find. You know, the rest of it is somebody needs to come back now and sit down and talk to me and say, well, I disagree with you on this because this is not true, but it is. You know, it's almost like you're arguing with the numbers. You know, say, well, yeah, this is the winning number, the winning ticket, but, you know, that number six, it don't look like a six. Well, a six is a six, but a five is a five. And this description I'm coming up with, you know, I'm not the one who made the description. Plato said it. And like I said, my goal, my aim was to find all the elements. And once I found the elements, then I had to turn around and make it fit to our known history, and it all fits.
So now, do you have a website or a place that people can find out more about Atlantis, more about you, and any of your other writings? Well, that's okay. I always like to offer it. I guess your book is available at most fine stores and Amazon, of course. Fantastic. Well, certainly been an interesting conversation. Did you get hit by COVID in the sense that it did it interfere in some of your researching or writing of the book?
Not really. You know, I finished the book actually while I was sitting in the hall for a whole year.
Yeah, well, it gives you the time, that's for sure.
I had my two shots. I'm glad things are looking better nowadays, and looking forward for life to return to normal. And if things work out, one of these days, I sent a letter to the government of Greece the other day and asking them to see if they wanted to pitch in whatever they can to help, provide the resources and whatever else they can to do another more in-depth, not just search, but a documentary that presents the real story, not just part of the story. I hope they bite. I hope they get back to me. So far, everything I heard has been positive. Everybody's excited about the find. I haven't had anybody questioning it yet. I'm open for debate. If anybody does, I like, you know, it makes me more educated when I have debates with people. And if anybody like to come back and say, this and that, they're very welcome. I hope we do that. And if we don't do that, I hope the next thing is to maybe proceed maybe one day to go forward and maybe do another documentary that shows the whole picture, not part of it.
Well, fantastic. I anybody listening, maybe they'll chip in. It's a great, great project, and thank you for doing a great research and book. Of course, the book we're talking about is Atlantis, The Find of a Lifetime, and the researcher author is Christos Dijonas. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Alon.
Thanks, Chris.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll say it.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.